Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to BLT, Business, Life, Transitions, the show that explores all the latest trends in your business, life, and our favorite topic, transitions. Hosted by Brian Basilico, the Director of Direction with B2B Interactive Marketing, and Jan Marino, CEO of High Gain Companies, Inc. And now it's time for some insightful conversation and interviews with your hosts, Brian and Jan.
Good morning, Jan.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing well. A little sore from golfing yesterday, but, you know, that's just part of the game. You know, it takes a while to get into golf shape.
Okay. I would get in driver shape, but I don't golf. But, you know, I know that a lot of business is done on golf courses, and so I'm usually the designated driver.
Nothing wrong with that. That's fun.
No. Yeah, well, I don't understand how people can, you know, chase a little ball all over the place, but whatever. So, anyway, listen, we were talking before the show, because you and I usually do, and we were talking about our guest who's going to be on today, Lou Adler. And one of the things that Lou does is work with companies about hiring systems so that you hire the best person for the job. And you and I were talking about we've both been fired. I've been fired twice, and you've been fired how many times? Once?
Well, I'd say one and a half.
One and a half. Okay.
Yeah, it was close to being fired, then I actually got headhunted and took a new job. So.
Oh, okay. All right. And so I know personally for me, it's part of my badge of honor to say that, you know, I've been downsized, right-sized, oversized, undersized, and I've been fired twice. And
right.
I think, you know, what did you learn from being fired?
Well, first and foremost, I don't play real well in the corporate sandbox.
Yeah.
It just wasn't my cup of tea. But, yeah. You know, it's hard, you know, when you're in a large team of people. It was like 30 some plus people. And, you know, I had projects and other people had projects, and we had a pool of, you know, designers and editors and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I tried to build the best rapport I could with all the people, but I, you know, was kind of being, I hate to say it this way, but kind of being undermined where my work was being pushed to the back. And, you know, the other person who is, you know, would sit down and chat with them all day and, you know, buy them lunch and do all, you know, just basically buttered them up. They, you know, she got her work done faster and better than mine. And, you know, what I learned from it is you just need to spend more time, you know, building relationships with people, because I was just in a, you know, the mode of here's what needs to be done, let's go, you know, and that's probably the best lesson I learned.
Yeah.
I'm much better at that now, though. How about you?
Yeah, well, I wasn't undermined. I just wasn't in the right place. I mean, like the second day, I knew, and I was terrified to go to work because the company was run on fear, and I didn't know that, you know, going into the job, and I had been recommended by a friend, and, you know, it just didn't work out. I think I lasted maybe a year and a half or something. And then I got called into the tower and fired. And, you know, I got laid off again, but then I got fired again. So that, you know, the learning was make sure that you're in the right place. And I mean,
right.
And by that, I mean, ask questions about the culture. So.
Yeah, because it's really hard to work in a place like that. I mean, where everything's run by fear, and I've been in those circumstances before too, and it's not fun.
Yeah.
it's not fun at all. Yeah, so it's up to you to really do your own. You know, everybody wants to get a job, but you should do your research and make sure that you're a good fit for the culture. And
makes sense. You know what kind of questions to ask. And I mean, you can tell a lot about a company when you first walk through the door and you look at the atmosphere and you pay attention to how people are acting. because if it's like a ghost town and nobody's saying anything, I know that I'm not going to do well there because I talk too much, you know, and I'm loud and and I like to have fun when I work. I know that's quite a concept, but you know, it's just it was very different, so it didn't work out, and I learned a lot. So.
Right. Well, speaking of learning a lot, we have our guest, Lou Adler. Lou, are you there?
Yes, I am here.
Hey, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hi, this is Lou Adler. Hi, everybody.
Yeah.
How are you doing
today?
I'm really
glad that...
I'm doing just fine. Well, it's early in California for me. You guys are already ready and rocking and rolling here.
Yes.
Well, no, in your honor, I think Jan just got out of bed, so it's all good.
That's all right.
So, Lou, can you tell us a little about a bit about yourself? I mean, I see that you're a Amazon Top 10 selling author, and it looks like you've done some Nightingale Conant stuff, too. Is that right?
Oh, I've been doing a lot of stuff lately, my background's a little bit different for being in the industry that I'm in, which is in recruiting. I have an engineering background, manufacturing background, financial and accounting background. I was running a company when I was young, hated my boss. So I was listening to your story about I actually quit 4 times. I couldn't deal with a group president. So I said, screw it, I'm out of here. And then the chairman kept on calling me back, no, stay. And I said, nah, I can't do this anymore with him. And he said, well, give us a year. And I said, I can't do it. So as I became a recruiter, I realized, because I wasn't an HR person, I just, you know, there's a business process to doing this. It's not just random luck.
Yes.
You understand what people need to do, what people want to do, and you set it up as a business process and a business system that respects everybody in the process, you actually can make it work, and you actually can raise or hire strong people, make them satisfied, make them motivated, and cultural fit's a key part of that component of the assessment. So my background's a bit unusual, and that's how I apply all that to the last 30, 40 years.
Awesome.
And so tell us how did you get into recruiting? What led you into that?
Well, so now I'm going back to late 70s, running a manufacturing company. Literally, it was 300 people in my company. I was 31 and 32 years old, working 80 hours a week. Had a little 4-year-old son whom I never saw Sunday afternoon, and so I was torn. Really loved the job, but also loved the family. I could see the family situation was deteriorating. And it was a hard choice. So the boss I had is a yeller and screamer. He only came on Thursdays. So Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday was great. And Friday I loved. Thursday I hated. And I even still hate Thursdays today because of that. That's not totally true. But one of the recruiters I was using invited my wife and I over to his house for dinner. And he was extremely successful recruiter, beautiful home, beautiful car, I mean everything. And they just had a beautiful dinner. And as we're driving home, my wife says, why don't you become a recruiter? So that was just, I said, nah, it's ridiculous. They said, nah, you might want to think about it. So then over the next couple of months, this boss, and he was always bugging me anyway, and I just would fight him back. So I just said, I quit. And I was talking to these recruiters at the same time. I said, I think I'll become a recruiter. But the actual idea was only do it for 6 months, for a year. But I know in that position, I would find other general manager jobs. So that was, it was kind of like a day I could try it out, see what it's like, and also find a better job because could do it. So I just actually left a very well-paying job. I was on a bonus. I was on this fast track and decided just to walk away. A lot of people thought I was stupid at some point. I thought it was kind of stupid too. But so that was really how it happened. My wife totally supported. And I'm still married 45 years later.
Congratulations.
Still see my son. We have a very nice relationship. So and when you balance it out, it was the right decision.
Yeah, that's great. That's just great. So you work with companies to help them, because I know hiring, when you talk about it being performance based and being a method or a process to it, I know that companies still don't understand that concept. So how do you help companies get there?
Well, I think this is a problem. I had a big discussion with some HR PhDs last week. And it's sad to say, but it's true, is most HR people don't think business process. Hey, you start with a series sequence of steps, and you have to accomplish these steps, and you have to do it sufficiently. What they think of is a point solution. The point solution is we have to do a better job of interviewing. We have to, another point solution is we have to do a better job of finding people.
Right.
But the reality of it is, it's a business process. Each of those points are part of a bigger thing, which is, hey, we want to have a system that hires highly engaged employees in our company. We want to do it consistently. We want that system to not only hire people at the front end, but also manage them through the onboarding process and also have it integrate with our performance management system. Now, that is actually not that complicated an idea. And yet it's alien to most HR people. They say, oh, I got to do a better job of interviewing because that's my problem.
Yeah.
Well, the problem
yeah.
might be far bigger than that. So now I go back to a factory that makes automotive parts. When you have an automotive part that all of a sudden comes off a line and it's starting to go out of spec, you start thinking, well, what could have caused that? Is it the tool making the part? Is it the procurement? Is it the material?
Uh-huh.
There could be 10 or 15 variables. So as you start diagnosing the problem, you start thinking back and back and back, and you finally get an answer. And that's engineers and all manufacturing. It's so logical that – so when I look at hiring, it's exactly the same thing, but HR doesn't think that way. And they've never done that for 50 years. The problems we have today are the same ones we had when I started in 1980. Doing this.
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so what? So pushback. I mean, I because I've worked with HR people most of my career, and I totally agree with you. Which is, I think, one of the reasons HR isn't invited to the big table. You know, when it comes to big decisions, is because they don't get any respect internally, and it's because of that. You know, in a box thinking.
So pushback is an understatement, of course.
Okay.
And here you're doing it for 50 years. You also have inertia. You also have conventional wisdom. You also have all of these processes.
Yeah.
Part of the discussion I had last week with the HR PhD, very well known, which I'll leave his name off the table, written books about this stuff. I basically say everybody wants to be, every HR person wants to be at the strategic table. But to be at the strategic table, you actually have to be strategic. And most people, whether it's an engineer, an accountant, a marketing person, production person, a sales rep, they start in a job at 22 or 23 or 24. They start getting promoted, and there's a sequence of steps that people go through that if they're getting promoted, not everyone goes through this, but it's almost like Darwinian evolution. You become a project leader. You become a team leader. You become a multifunctional leader. You get put in multifunctional projects. You start getting tactical. You start getting system thinking. You start getting strategic thinking. And so you kind of put all of these pieces together. Not everybody, those people who are successful and rise through the ranks that way, get a sense of all of these things. So by the time they become a director and a VP, they got there because they were strategic in their thinking. HR doesn't go, which is phenomenal, doesn't go through that same evolutionary process. They tend to get hired because they're diplomatic, because they're strong in compliance, they don't aggravate anybody. So then the people, and it's sad to say, but I find maybe 20% of all HR people actually have this strategic DNA. So you can't get it if you don't, you got it because you learned it through step by step as you were growing up from 25 to 40 to 40 and to 50. So that to me is the reason why there's such a void in the HR field. And then it becomes protective. I got to protect my turf.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So are you starting to see that change, you know, across the country or in different industries or not?
I don't know that I'm starting to see it. I certainly see it. So I have a very – so now I go from a practical – so I'm not that big a company. We work with 20 or 30 or 40 companies. We certainly see a couple of big ones that we're working with that all of a sudden, because of one reason or other, realize they had a problem and they are going about and they're changing it.
Uh-huh.
So I definitely see in that case. Sometimes companies change it because of need, sometimes because of its luck, sometimes because they got a great brand. So I don't know that I see it as I see pockets of change happening, and I'm not sure what the underlying cause is. I don't know that it's people just woke up in the morning and said, yes, I now see the light. I think it's more circumstantial. Something happened that caused him to do it. The president got aggravated because he hired somebody he shouldn't, and I've seen that happen a couple of times. That's generally speaking how we get brought in. We made a few bad hires. Let's figure out why. And in this department, and that department. But then there's always luck. At the individual level, every single manager has their own pet. I mean, you think about it. Interviewing is one of the most important things a company can do. And yet you talk to 20 managers at random in any company, they all do it differently. But you talk to accountants as how they fill in their expense reports. I bet you talk to 20 people, 19 of them do it exactly the way they're supposed to do it. And the other one, the secretary or his administrator, does it.
Uh-huh.
which is the only process
yeah.
that allows, you know, interviewing we can do any way we want, despite that it's important,
right.
we'll do it the way we want to do it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and there seems to be no coordination between the people who are interviewing within a company and everybody, I don't know everybody, but a lot of them are asking the same question. And then, they, you know, like, why should we hire you or what can you do for us? And then they don't compare notes, which is really interesting, so that you get this gut feeling thing going. And so that doesn't always work, obviously.
Never works. No, that's called random luck.
Yes.
So, Lou, what are some of the things that?
Yeah,
I do. What are some of the things that job seekers in today's market have to be thinking about to work better, to be interviewed or to get that job?
Well, let me just put a plug for my book. So, and you'll see why I'm coming from this. I wrote a book,
sure.
the most recent one, called The Essential Guide for Hiring and Getting Hired,
mm-hmm.
and it really was a rewrite. Of significant proportions to Hire With Your Head, which is the one I did three different editions.
Right.
The new book, what I tried to do is start off by saying, hey, here's this hiring system and how a interviewer or hiring manager needs to do it. But I also then in every chapter I said to candidates, I said, if you're being interviewed this way, you will be accurately interviewed and assessed and properly hired for this job. I said the probability of that happening is 1 in 15, though, so candidates have to take matters in their own hands. And that was really, and that was very hard to do, to sit on in the middle and figure, okay, if a candidate does this or a hiring manager does this, what is a candidate supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
Part of it was because I prepped thousands, maybe it was thousands, of candidates in 20 years when I was a full-time recruiter for 20, 25. I mean, literally, I set up 15 or 20 or 25 interviews a month, and I debriefed candidates ahead of time and afterwards. So you get a lot of experience in seeing what candidates can screw up and what they don't do. But the one tip I always tell to candidates, if you feel in the first 1 or 2 minutes or 5 minutes of the interview that you're being judged on something other than your ability to do the work, stop the interview, intervene, and just ask the hiring manager, can you please give me a quick overview of what this job is all about? What are some of the things you want done? How performance is going to be measured? I'd like to give you some examples of work that I've done that's related to that. Number one, you get kudos for having the guts to stop the interview because you're being judged by how tall you are, how short you are, or what race you are, or religion,
right.
or stuff that doesn't
right.
make sense. But at least this way you'll get, and you're also being judged by how aggressive you are. So here's a way to be aggressive and
right.
also be judged based on your ability to do the work. That, to me, is the one single thing a candidate can do to get in the game.
Yes. Yes, so you have to, I mean, you go in with the same power that the person who's hiring has, and
Well, that's not true. No, Jan, you don't. You have no
okay.
power. Unless
okay, well, that's why I wanted to get that clear, because some people, you know, say they've got the power when they go in, and you're saying they don't.
No, they don't. They have they're okay. disrespected. They, particularly if they're an active candidate, they're considered a waste of the hiring manager's time. The probability that I'm going to want to hire this person is 1 in 10. So there's always this negative feeling about a candidate who's actively applied for a job. You have no power and you're disrespected. The way to get power is take power. And that's why asking these kinds of questions. You always have – the person
yeah.
who's asking the questions has power. So start asking questions. And really what you're doing is being a sales rep, and if you're familiar with a process called discovery,
right.
is you're going to a customer
mm-hmm.
and you're asking, hey, tell me what your problems are.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pretty much
exactly.
what I'm saying. Hey, let me act like a consultant. Go in there, ask questions, act like a consultant, and then demonstrate what you've done that can solve their problem. Now you have power when you've done that. But initially, now if you're a passive candidate, meaning they recruited you and wooed you, yes, you have lots of power. Irrespective
mm-hmm.
of that, the passive candidate still asks the same questions. They just
yeah.
have it. It's easier for them to do it. It would be logical that passive candidate would ask those questions. So I just tell an active candidate, ask the same questions. If you ask good questions, you're going to get kudos just because you've asked the right kinds of questions, figuring out what the problem with the job is.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell them, don't worry about the culture. You can create the culture yourself. Culture is very variable, depending on how strong and how capable you are as a person. So you have a capability. Now, obviously, your relationship with your boss is the most, probably the most important one that defines a company's culture.
Right.
The second one is the pace of the organization. You're growing fast. You don't have any resources. You got to think on your feet. So those two, I would
right.
say, define two-thirds of a culture, your relationship with the manager and the pace of the organization.
So I think that's very valuable for our listeners to know that, because a lot
mm-hmm.
of people are either in the job market right now that listen to the show, or they're thinking about going back into the job market because they're not happy with what they have. So this is really invaluable. I'm sorry, Brian, you were going to say something.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask Lou, what is your thought about how to kind of build their personal brand so that they come across as somebody who's stronger than just, say, somebody who's just putting a resume down on a desk?
Well, the problem I have, so let me kind of give one step back and go two forward, well, hopefully.
Okay.
What I find it difficult and almost silly at the core level is candidates apply to jobs they're not qualified for. And,
mm-hmm.
and I mean, you got this list of criteria on a resume, which truthfully is not the job. That's a, when you look at most job descriptions, they're not job descriptions, they're people descriptions. It's everything about a person. So at one level, a candidate can, and if you get an interview based on that, the likelihood you're a perfect fit for some job that's ill-defined is pretty remote. So what I suggest to candidates is, hey, if you find a job on LinkedIn or Job Board or Career Builder or Indeed or wherever you find it, don't just apply directly. Start trying to figure out, how do I get to the top of the list? Spend more time figuring out, hey, use that as a lead. If I was a salesman, I see a job, I see a company trying to buy a product, I'm not going to just go through procurement and hopefully I'm one of 25 vendors. I'm going to talk to who's the buyer, who's the – so I kind of take that analogy is that,
mm-hmm.
hey, LinkedIn, you can find the names of somebody in that department or someone you know who can get you to the top of the list. Even if you can just
yeah.
find the name of the department head, let's assume it's an engineering spot or a software spot or a sales spot, well, just go in and do something different. Hey, here's
yeah.
a problem I think you probably have. I've looked at your financials and I've seen that you have some problems with this area. I've done something like this. I'd love to have an opportunity to come in and just briefly chat with you about it. Don't even start thinking it's an interview. I think we go
yeah.
too fast. I mean, when you think about it, when you go in for an interview, it's a very transactional process. They box check your skills, they force fit you in an ill-defined job, and hopefully you'll be happy. That's the likelihood of that happening. Well, Gallup even demonstrates that 70% of the U.S. workforce is disengaged. So I say
right.
it's exactly for that reason. Don't think about just getting a job to pay, make the payroll. Think about, hey, what's my long-term reason for taking this, and let me see if I can go around the system to get that job. I think if you do those kinds of things and then start asking questions in the middle of the interview, it's a totally different game that you're playing. But I think it puts you at the top of the list, puts you a high probability of getting the job and one that you'd want.
That's great advice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is really, because that's exactly what has to happen. If you think about how many people are trying to go after a position and don't really think about their, you know, managing their careers, it's astonishing.
Well,
it's going to be mind-numbing to the HR people to get, you know, 600 resumes of unqualified people when trying to sift through and find 10 that are even close.
Yeah, and it's so – coincidentally, or maybe not, I'm going to be spending all day up, well, I can't even tell you where I'm going, but I'm with a company that's got a lot of money that's going to completely, that wants to develop a new state-of-the-art job board, and they're bringing 15 people in, they're flying all together, we're going to spend all day tomorrow redesigning it from scratch, say, what would it take? So
yeah.
the one thing that I basically say, you think about what you just said there, Jan.
Yeah.
Most of the work that goes on in an HR department is screening out people whom they're never going to hire. And
right.
they try to have what I call the candidate experience to make those people who they're not going to hire feel good. So
uh-huh.
I said, why do we waste that time? Let's not let people apply
right.
to jobs they're not qualified for.
Right.
Now, that's not an insignificant, you know, we got all these
yeah.
automation. So let's assume that you go to a job board, you pay some minor fee, but it says you only have the right to apply to 5 or 6 jobs a month. Now, all of a sudden, both the company and the candidate are now going to say, okay, I've only got 5 or 6. Let me study these a little bit better. So then the company itself is going to do a little bit better job of defining what you should study. They're going to get fewer – their role is not going
mm-hmm.
to be to screen out people. Their role is going to be to attract the right people. That
right.
helps both sides of the equation. Now, let's just say this. What I just described there is the way it should be. I'm not the one putting the money in or designing it. I'm just going to be there advising them, telling them that's what they
mm-hmm.
should do. Will they
mm-hmm.
do it? Who knows? I doubt it, but
yeah.
because I am somewhat cynical, having been around for 20 years, seeing all these – the way it should be done and not being done that
yeah.
way. So, but
yeah.
you never know. The fact I got invited to speak
yeah.
my mind there, I thought was pretty cool.
That is very cool. That is very cool. Listen, we're getting down to the end here, and I want to make sure that you get your contact information out to our listeners. So if people want to get a hold of you or if they want to buy you know, find out more about you, Lou, where do they need to go?
Well, I think the best way would be go to my website. It says louadlergroup.com. There's newsletters, there's books, there's topics, there's articles. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. Largely,
right.
It's, most of it, quite frankly, though, is geared to hiring managers and to recruiters. That's my market.
Yes.
That's who,
yes.
The only thing I do for job seekers is a couple. Well, actually, on YouTube, if you look up Lou, there's probably 10 or 15, maybe 20 videos for job seekers that you can find.
Yes.
So that's how I do. But if you go to louadlergroup.com, you'll find everything you need to know. And stuff
yes,
you don't want to know, so that's what I would call
well,
it.
Well, we really, I was just so thrilled when you said that, you know, that you wanted to be a guest on our program because...
No, I didn't know it was going to be 7 o'clock in the morning California time. I actually misread that, so I probably would have said no if I knew it was this early.
You probably would have said no.
Well,
we
we're
really
glad you said yes.
Well, okay, hopefully it was helpful. Hopefully the listeners think some of these tips were useful.
Oh,
yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
It's always great to hear it from both sides. You know, I think that's one of the things is we get so inundated with trying to find tips and tricks to do all these things, but we don't really think about the person on the other side of the table, what they're facing.
Nope, no,
yeah.
I agree with you. Okay, thanks
thank
very much,
you.
Buddy.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Lou. Appreciate
bye-bye.
You getting up early with us. Take care.
Cool.
Yeah, so that was action-packed is the best way to put it.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. Really interesting coming from that viewpoint, and I'm sure it's like trying to turn a behemoth around. But you know, you have to start somewhere, and I know that Lou has been really making some big dents and done some great stuff, and I love his articles on LinkedIn, and he's on Fox News, and you know he's a great guy, so very knowledgeable. So
yeah, very very knowledgeable, and you know he. There's something about people that talk fast. They just seem to get out so much information in a short period of time. It's like, you know, you got to take notes as you're going along.
Well, here's what's interesting. Because I listen to people's voices and I listen for accents. And I'm willing to bet he's either from Detroit or he is from the East Coast. He is not a native Californian.
You think?
I'll bet.
You're probably right, yeah.
You know, people from New York used to just really intimidate me. And just because they did talk fast and because they were aggressive. And then I married a Bronx boy, and that all changed. It's like,
I'm with
you. New York. Okay.
So that's why I talk fast, because my family's from Queens. So.
All right. There you go. There you go.
That explains a lot. So,
That explains a lot.
Yep, very great great amount of information in this, and I think that's, you know, it's really important what he said about,
yes.
You know, trying to go in there with a solution rather than just try to be the victim of your typical, you know, employment application process.
Right, exactly. And it's, I mean, when I first started my career, I worked for a guy in HR. And I mean, he was like the guru of God, and it was the same conversation. And I won't even tell you how long ago that was, but it's sad that it's the same conversation we're still having. So,
right.
Anyway, good job. Good interview.
Yeah, you too. Well, thanks for getting Lou. I mean, you're bringing on some awesome guests, and we got some great ones coming up. I know KR, our assistant, is lining them up like planes at O'Hare. So
I know.
Everybody who's listening, you know, make sure that you come back and, you know, check out some of these fabulous guests. And if Lou talked too fast for you, guess what, guys? We're on iTunes. So you can go to iTunes and look up Business Life Transitions or Brian Basilico or Jan Marino. And you can search out and re-listen to any of these episodes. And we'd love it if you take a little bit of time. You have to go to the iTunes app on your desktop computer, but you can give us a review. So, Jan, have a great week.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks.
Okay, that's today's BLT, Business Life Transitions. You can contact Brian at bbasilico@me.com and Jan at jan.highgainco@gmail.com. Join us again next week for some more great insight about your business, your life, and your transitions. Till next time, thanks for tuning in.